Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is here and
we declare the garden officially open!
Molly Green
and Taryn Rudge.
Well, yes, sometimes that's God's way of getting you to enjoy gardener's world.
The Happy Garden!
Welcome to another spring edition of the Happy Garden podcast on what has been a week, my goodness, of sunshine and showers, but it is now officially spring when we do get those sunny days, especially if they do happen on a weekend or a day when you're not working. The buzz of looking out the window and seeing the blue sky just makes you want to garden, to sow new life, to plan the forthcoming summer colour and to imagine tubs and baskets just dripping with bright flowers. It's really something to look forward to. And reminding yourself, as you do every year, don't do too many pots because they're a right pain in the bum when you get a hosepipe ban and you've got to water them all. Anne here holding my hand as we cut the official opening ribbon to spring with an oversized massive pair of scissors. Taryn Rudge.
Hello.
Oh, good morning, you.
Good morning. It's a bit early.
It's early morning.
It's a bit early, isn't it?
Well, you and I, we're busy schedules for a couple of weeks, so we've kind of had to shoehorn this in, and it's really early of a Sunday morning.
I wouldn't be surprised if a little head pops around the door here and goes, "Shut up!"
It is still dark. I mean, oh gosh. Well, we're here at least. Listen, how's your week been? Because you have been off your feet for 2 or 3 weeks with RHS exams and all sorts. How's things your end?
It's been tiring. It has been really, really tiring. My feet haven't touched the ground. Oh. I've been here, I've been there, I've been all over the country, Molly, doing exams. And we finished up with our own exams at Winterbourne Gardens this weekend. Essentially, they're all done and dusted.
I bet you breathed a sigh of relief, didn't you? As did your students, no doubt, when they were all finished.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they're funny things, exams are, aren't they? But if you imagine it's a practical exam as well, so that's what I do, they're even funnier things because no talking, you know, it's got to be like a written exam, but it's practical. So just got to get them through it. They all did really well, I'm pretty sure.
Are they marked already?
Well, we don't know because they go off to the RHS, you see. And,
right, OK.
They might be moderated. Even though I've got the results, they might be moderated at RHS. We just have to wait for what comes back, really.
Good luck, everybody. Oh, they were under you. They'll be fine.
They'll be fine.
Taught by the best.
Thank you. But of course...
So this week on the Happy Garden Podcast, Darren, what are you going to be bringing to the horticultural table? We've got usual bits and bobs.
We've got some jobs, obviously, for you to be up to in the garden. My new slot, sowing and growing, I'm calling it. We're going to be concentrating on sowing seeds indoors, because that's what folks will be up to at this time of year, is sowing seeds indoors. And I'm just going to do a general sort of ramble about how to sow your seeds indoors. I've got a money-saving tip as well, folks. And, of course, I think last week my jokes were just superb.
They were.
You know, I might have set the bar a little bit too high, but I've got five more for you. Five more.
Looking forward to it. By the way, your sewing slot, which we haven't still found a good name for, will be preceded by a little bit of music from the Houseplant Band.
Oh, wow.
Today, which I think you'll enjoy. Yeah,
great.
Little take off of the Boo Radleys, which you may enjoy a little bit later on. And and as well, Darren, Andy Lound, Amaze and Astound with Andy Lound. Andy will be here a little bit later on with Horticultural Histories. I thought we ought to get the bush out of the way before History of the Bush, which put at the bottom of the pile for a while. But we need to get it out of the way because we start our mini-series with the National Trust in the next couple of months. So it's pretty important that that we do that one first.
It's good to get the bush out the good way, isn't it, really?
I do know that it took Andy Lound at least 40 minutes to record it because he could not stop laughing. So that's something to come in the pod in a little while.
Emac.
Oh, God, that used to stink. Do you remember? Hang on, which bits did you emac, Darren?
Hairs up my nose.
Oh, my God. Can I just say the Happy Garden Podcast does not advocate sticking it in back up your nose, Darren?
It was horrible as well. You just get a matchstick and you can feel it burn.
I thought you were joking. You're actually not. Oh, Darren. Oh, Darren.
Tried it in my ears once as well. Don't go there.
No. Oh, my goodness, Darren. Now, listen, moving on. Now, we also on the podcast today, we've had a fair few people. You might have seen it on the Facebook page. We've had a couple of pictures of frog spawn, which has already been spawned over the last few weeks. Thought it might be nice today to have a little bit of frog and toad chat. So Frog Life, the charity Frog Life, are going to join us in a little while. I mean, frogs really are the gardener's friend, aren't they, Adas?
Yeah. You've got to have some frogs. Just to put a little bit of water in the garden, it doesn't need to be a massive amount, does it? Mm. And they will, they're going to deal with a whole host of pests, aren't they? Including slugs.
And snails, which, again, is on the list to talk about in a little while here on the podcast. So all of that and more to come.
All of this and more still to come on
The Happy Garden
with Molly Green and Darren Rudge.
Daz, as always, shall we start with some of your jobs for the week ahead?
Okay, then.
Oh, I say, sweetie, this is my favourite bit. Time for Darren to be absolutely flabulous and regale us with his gardening jobs for the week ahead.
Well, yes. 3, 2, 1, and go.
Well, have you got lavaterias in the garden? They're like buddleias, aren't they? But basically, at this point in time, you should prune them hard back. So give them a good prune back down to healthy growth. Remember, just above a pair of buds, 1/4 inch or 5 millimetres, folks, just above a pair of healthy buds. And basically, it'll give you that lovely young lush growth that will see your lavateria in full flower in mid-summer. Cut vigorous climbers such as honeysuckle and ivy hard back as well. And summer herbaceous perennials will start to kick back into life. Now you can lift them now, folks, and you can divide them into bits and pieces. Disregard or compost the centre and plant the outer sections back into the garden. Scatter some fertiliser around your fruit trees, fish blood and bones, something like that, and that will kick them into life. It's all about kicking them into life, isn't it? Prune overgrown or newly planted blackcurrants hard back, almost to the ground level, and this will encourage those new shoots that will fruit for you this year.
Perfect.
Perfect. Thank you, Adels. So we're going to be doing a little bit of frog and toad talk very, very shortly. But firstly, let's get to a few of your messages. And of course, we love hearing from you week to week. It's your podcast. If you've got any ideas, if you've got any tips, any questions, photos, you are more than welcome to send them to us. Here are just some of the ways to get involved.
Get interactive with Molly. Lovely show. Professionals.
Come on.
Get interactive with Molly and Darren. Follow them on social media.
It's a bit like stalking.
Just search for the Happy Garden Podcast on Instagram or Facebook.
So we've had a couple of emails, Adas. Roses. Let's start with roses. Firstly, Penny, who's been in touch on the Happy Garden Podcast Facebook page, who says, well, blooming heck, Molly, I used Darren's tip of using liquid honey for cuttings and it's worked. My Valentine's roses lasted 2.5 weeks before they gave up the ghost. They had shoots coming from them when I went to bin them, so I thought, let's give Rudge's tip a go. Cut the shoots and they seem to be growing really well. Good success story, Daz.
Well, you know, you take the advice and look what you get, Penny. You get lots and lots of lovely roses, don't you? Leaving them for 2 weeks is a bit... you know, you should do them straight away if you can do. But well done, well done. Liquid honey has been used for generations, folks. So it's not a new idea. It's certainly not my idea. It's been used by growers for a long, long time. So use it and utilise it. It's what nature gives us. Remember, honey is naturally antifungal, naturally antibacterial. Basically, has all the microbial activity that you need to strike your cutting. So thank you, Penny, for proving me right. Now use it with a whole host of things, not just your roses.
When you say she left it a bit too long for 2.5 weeks, what do you mean?
Well, you know, your cutting needs to be taken straight away and done within the day, really, if you can do. I know they were probably sitting in water and things like that, but the longer you leave it, the more those vessels will seal and the less chance you've got for those cuttings to actually take. So they don't last forever. Yeah, so you've done really, really well to get them to actually strike.
So if you have a bunch of roses, I mean, it might be worth, straight away from the shop trying to strike half of them and then leave the other half in the vase to enjoy the heads? Because you have to take the heads off them, don't you?
Yeah, most definitely, yeah. Yeah, so take a bundle, as Molly says, straight away. And it just depends on how long they've been sitting in the shop, really.
Yeah, of course. So, it's worth a go, though, isn't it?
Always better to do it fresh. But don't do it at the garden centre, folks, because that is illegal. And
you will be fined and banned. Yeah, yeah. Also, Sally in Taunton as well. Hi, Molly and Darren. This is the first time I've been in touch with the podcast. I'm loving it. Yay! Thank you ever so much. And welcome, Sally. Welcome to our family. And she's got a rose question as well. I've got a question about an inherited rose. When we moved into our house, the previous owner had left a few pots with a few plants. One pot has a tall rose. It's about 2.5 feet with 3 stems. I've no idea if it's a neglected rose that needs pruning or whether it may be a climber that needs support. It may sound a daft question, but is there a way to tell just by looking at the rose? It does look spindly. I know I need to do something, but not sure what to do for the best. Thanks for your help, both. All the best, and that's Sally. And she did attach a couple of pictures, which I forwarded.
Yeah, so by the looks of the pictures, Sally, it's probably not a climbing rose because climbing roses are very, very spindly. They would have longer stems than what you've got here. This looks like what we call a floribunda. You know, it's a multiple flowering rose. They tend to have multiple stems, so you get lots and lots of flowers on there. And really, to answer your question, what to do with it, I think it's struggling in its pot. You know, I think it just needs to be let loose in the garden. So if it was mine, what I would do is I'd find it a nice spot in the garden and actually plant it in the soil, put some well-rotted compost or manure into the soil before you actually, you know, just dig it in, just fork it through and then basically plant it. So you might want to prune it back. So take it down by half. Look for a bud, okay? And once again, as we just mentioned, around about 1/4 inch, 5 millimetres above a bud. Make sure it's outward facing, so facing away from the inner of the plant, because we don't want any congested growth. And then prune them back. Take them down by half. And then what that will do is it'll threaten that plant, it'll cause it to bush out and it'll be a bushier plant for you. If you can't or haven't got any land to plant it into, then put it into a bigger pot. It's as simple as that. OK, there you go.
We're going to be talking to Frog Life, the charity that is all things amphibious, very, very shortly. First of all, though, we're going to be talking about slugs and snails, because did you see the piece in the news this week, Darren, that the Wildlife Trust and the RHS want us to live with and love snails and slugs? Make friends with mollusks, the piece was called.
Yeah, you know, gastropods, that's what we want. And gastropod means stomach foot.
Oh, yes.
Because they've got one foot and it's in their stomach. Imagine that. There's another fascinating facts about mollusks, Molly.
Oh, go on then.
Mainly they're hermaphrodite. Okay, so they contain both sexes. When they get together to have a little bit of amore, okay, they like to hang upside down, slugs do. The one that takes the male part, the appendage comes out of its head. So basically, yeah, I know a few people like that, don't you? Oh, they're brilliant. Oh. I love slugs and snails. I really do. And, you know, perhaps later we can chat about snail caviar. Have you heard of that?
Oh, no.
There are snail farms. I think they're principally in Wales, but they actually farm snails for their eggs, and then they're selling them as snail caviar. So they're an alternative, a cheaper alternative to caviar. Apparently they're really, really nutritious. Less expensive than caviar, let's put it like that. But what do you think about that? Would you try that?
Hang on, I'm just Googling it. Yeah, escargot caviar. Yeah, what does it taste like? The flavour of snail caviar has been described as being reminiscent of baked asparagus or baked mushrooms with a subtle flavour and woody notes, strong earthy flavour, crunchier than fish egg caviar. Serve with toast and sour cream. Ugh. I used to keep giant African land snails for many years, and you only have to look the other way, and when you look back again, there's 300-400 eggs in the tank. They're quite big eggs as well. I wonder if that's the sort of thing. Well, talking slugs and snails, you do, of course, need a healthy chain in the garden, and a natural controller of slug and snail numbers are, of course, frogs and toads. And a few pictures of frog spawn have been coming in from you guys, so we know their life cycle this year has already started. But what about the weather? What about the fact that it was the warmest and the wettest February on record? How have they fared? Well, Kathy Wormold, who is CEO of the wonderful charity Frog Life, had a word with me in the week, and I started by asking her just how she thought they were doing so far this year.
Actually, it's been over the past couple of years that we've getting reports of early leaving of hibernation, and it is because the weather's so much milder. But the problem is then if we have a cold snap and they've spawned, the spawn struggles to survive. They will sometimes have another spawning session later in the season, but not always.
So I'm taking it there is a concern about 2024 then, with what, the warmest February we've had, the wettest February we've had. They must have come out quite early.
They did. They came out really, really early in the year. And yeah, it has been, well, it has been quite a warm winter, hasn't it? The problem also with the warmer weather is that we think that they don't hibernate, because amphibians don't hibernate fully. So if the weather warms up, they'll come out of hibernation. But the problem with them doing that, and if they do that too regularly, so they're coming in and out of hibernation, particularly the females are not rested enough during the spawning period. They're weak for spawning. So there's sort of a double impact of it, you know, they're spawning very early in the year, and also the females are struggling because their bodies are weak.
Yeah. Kathy, we have already had, and this isn't sort of in the last couple of days, the last couple of weeks, we've had a couple of pictures to the Happy Garden Podcast website and Facebook page of frog spawn already being laid, which really made me raise my eyebrow. I mean, to actually be laying the spawns early.
Yeah, they have been laying spawn, well, in some areas from early February or even earlier than that. It just depends on the region. It does vary region to region, obviously, because it's a bit warmer down south than up north, but not at the moment, actually, usually.
So,
it does vary region to region. Oh, my gosh, sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. Don't worry. I've got a couple that have been barking. Don't you worry. How are frogs and toads faring across the UK, Kathy? We've known for years, you know, they have all sorts of environmental struggles, but how are numbers doing? Do we have any fair idea?
Well, we have a good idea of toads because we've been running the Toads on Roads project for over 30 years. Mm. And so we have very solid database for toads. And in 2017, we worked with the University of Zurich on analysing their toad data. And we also then did mapping of various regions to establish which were good for toad populations. And we actually found that there was huge habitat fragmentation from road developments and other infrastructure, which meant that most toad populations would have to negotiate some sort of infrastructure to reach the breeding ponds. And that research concluded a 68% decline in toad populations over that 30-year period. Frogs and newts are more difficult because we don't have that sort of data set for them. So it is more anecdotal data. We do notice that we get a lot more inquiries into our information service and on social media, people saying that they're not getting frog spawn or they're seeing fewer frogs. But as I say, we don't really have solid data sets. We're trying to work on that. Amphibians have been very much overlooked. So the data held in them is far lower than, say, for mammals and birds, which does make it difficult to establish trends. But the RSPB did do a survey quite a few years back now, and they concluded a 17% decline in garden amphibians, and those are reports from their supporters who do garden surveys. So we know that they are declining, but the rate of decline is uncertain. There's also quite a few diseases that affect mainly frogs, but also other amphibians. When we talk about selling fog spawn, we can deal with that.
Yes, that is something that we must touch on. With your toad data, do the government, do local councils take note? Do they take action I used to be one of the leaders, Kathy, where I used to live, of toad patrol in my area, crossing the toads and the newts and the frogs across. So I'm aware of the problem. I've seen the deaths on the roads. So with these numbers and the data of how many get squished, do local councils, are they trying to take any steps at all to try and help them get across their breeding grounds?
Well, it does vary council to council and what resources they have. Unfortunately, most councils have lost the resources they had for employing biodiversity officers or wildlife officers, etc. So biodiversity and nature always seems to be the first thing that's cut when there are budget cuts. But it does depend on the council. There are some councils that will put up signs warning motorists and cyclists that it is a toad crossing area. Some will support toad patrols in providing them with signs to put up themselves or advice. And then, of course, we coordinate the Toads and Roads patrols and they submit their data to FrogLife. Some will also submit their data to the local record centres. And the amphibian and reptile groups, OG UK, these are individual volunteer groups that are across the country. They're very good at collecting data and helping amphibians across roads, etc.
And of course, as a gardening podcast, we must extol the virtues of toads and frogs. They are the gardener's friend. You want them in the garden.
Oh, definitely. They are a fantastic form of natural pesticide. So you really want toads and frogs in your garden because they'll help to control invertebrates, but it's a natural way, so it works well within the ecosystem rather than, you know, using pesticides, which is unnatural and can upset the ecosystem. Slowworms are also a gardener's best friend because they are great at composting and retain good high quality soil.
How to invite them in, though, Kathy? If people don't want to go to the expense of having a big wildlife pond, what do you need to encourage toads and frogs and slowworms
well,
to you?
Mainly it is providing fresh water because they need fresh water in order to breed. But they also do spend a lot of time on land, so they'll often only be in their ponds to breed. So it's important to provide them with high-quality terrestrial habitats, so areas with longer grass, logs, stones, a log pile, rubble, compost for slow worms. Those all help. They provide them with areas where they can forage for food, take refuge from predators, and hibernate over winter. So if you can't have a pond, if you could provide some rough areas on your allotment or garden, that can help support the frogs, toads, and newts.
Well, just finally, there is loads of info on your website, Frog Life. Yeah, for those that don't know anything, just finally, Kathy, what is Frog Life? What do you do there?
Well, we are a national wildlife conservation organisation with a specific remit to conserving our native amphibian and reptile species and their habitats. We're also very passionate about widening the engagement in nature conservation, particularly by underrepresented groups. So we do a lot of community outreach, educational projects, just to raise awareness of amphibians and reptiles, because awareness is very low and they're often overlooked.
And the website details?
www.froglife.org.uk. If you want to find out about a toad patrol, if you look at under the section what we do and then go into Toads and Roads project, there's loads of information on there. And under our publication or under our information section, we've got publications, Just Add Water and Urban Tales, which will also help you to know how you can garden with amphibians and reptiles in mind.
Kathy Wormold there, who is CEO of Frog Life. Froglife.org if you want more information. They are absolutely brilliant. And next week, you heard a touch on it there, but we'll hear more about stop spawn sales. Did you realise, Darren, well, we'll talk about it more next week, that people sell captive bred. They actually take it out of the wild and sell it online, which is illegal. That does go on. They've got a campaign to try and stop it.
I didn't, but I guess it happens, like you say. So, and no, you shouldn't be doing that. Shouldn't be taking anything out of the wild, folks. So, you know, stop it.
Stop it. We'll discuss this next week because Kathy will join us for a bit more talk. But just quickly on the back of that, Darren, people sometimes may envisage that to get frogs and toads and newts into your garden, and we've already talked about them being in the chain and slugs and snail control, you haven't got to have a huge wildlife pond. You can still entice and encourage them in, can't you?
Yeah, any sort of water will entice amphibians into the garden, and even a damp patch, just a damp slot. So, you know, one of the money-saving tips we used to do was to say, you know, in your glasshouse, which is intrinsically damp, take a paving slab and just prop it up on a brick. You'll get amphibians that come in and they make a happy home underneath, and then as a slug comes past, they've got it. Okay, so, you know, just a small bowl of water, something like that, will encourage lots and lots and lots of creatures in, as well as other things that we actually want in the garden. Dragonflies, you know, all those sorts of things will come in once you start to make a little happy haven. But dark corners, really, really useful for habitat and for wildlife, for things like newts and frogs. So, yeah, doesn't take a lot. And remember, they are the gardener's friend. So really, really encourage them.
More of your questions shortly, asking about an artificial lawn, a bit about rhubarb, a bit about last year's fuchsias and what to do with them. However, right now, let's get sowing. Now, the Houseplant Band have done us a little bit of a musical introduction to your slot, Daz.
Okay.
There's a shortened radio edit for weekly use, but here is the full 12-inch version to kick us off.
My packets of seeds are keen to breathe the tins that overflow. But what I need is advice to heed. There's so much I don't know. So Darren, help me understand it. I know that you've won golds, so explain the reasons and about the seasons. I don't want them to fail or mold. Tell me what to plant on Mondays. Tell me what to sow on Sundays. Tell me when would be a good day. So the issue hoot up and don't die down.
Yeah, I think he's a bit toppy.
It was a bit toppy, but it's the best that could be done in the time constraints. So as I say, there is a shortened version to use, but There you go.
Fantastic.
Okay. All right. Right then, after that introduction, Darren, let's have your guide to sowing seeds.
Well, you know, at this time of year, folks, this is what you're going to be doing, isn't it? You're going to be sowing seeds indoors in containers. And it's ideal for seeds that need warmth to germinate and grow, such as tender and half ornamentals, and, of course, your vegetables. Sowing seeds indoors allows you to basically get an early start, OK, and give them the protection they really, really need. Again, it's cost-effective, it's fun, it ensures faster, more reliable germination, and allows you to get growing earlier in the year and provide seedlings with protection in case there is any frosty weather still around. You can sow a whole range of things, folks. So that question really is, what can I sow? It's like, how long is a piece of string? You've got tender crops like your tomatoes and your chilies. You've got half-hardy annuals like cosmos, nasturtiums. Hardy annuals like broccoli and sunflowers. Annual climbers like morning glory and sweet peas. And tender herbs, things like basil, those sorts of things. Sowing times can vary depending on what plant, okay? But always check the packet. So the big thing is, check the packet and use that as a general guide. Sowing in spring, most tender and half-hardy flowers and vegetables, that's what you'll do and that's what you'll be doing at this particular point in time. Most seeds at this time of year need a minimum temperature of around about 18 degrees. So wherever you are, you can use the house, or if you've got a propagation case, just set it on around about 18 degrees. And they should literally germinate within sort of a week to 2 weeks if you've got the actual process right. Now, some seeds you will need to just scratch the seed coat with a knife or a piece of sandpaper, and some you need to soak, like sweet peas. You'll need to soak for around about 24 hours and then they should germinate for you. So what you need is, you obviously need a packet of seeds. You'll need a seed tray, okay, or some modular pots, those sorts of things. You'll need some compost. So seed compost is best, but if you've got some multi-purpose compost, you can sieve it through. Just sieve it through and make sure it's really fine, because you don't want those big pore spaces, because you drop a fine seed on there and it'll just drop into the pore space and it's gone, basically. No light. The pore space will fill with water, and basically your seeds will rot off. Obviously, you're going to need a watering can with a fine rose, some plant labels, a propagation lid, a piece of glass, piece of plastic, or my favourite is the old croissant case. So the best thing about using a croissant case is you've got to eat all the croissants first. And then you can put your compost in. You've got a lid you can close then. Hey presto, you've got an instant propagation case that you can just pop on a sunny windowsill. Now, there's three things to consider when you're sowing your seeds. You've got fine seed, medium seed, and large seed. So quickly, just to go through these for you. So fine seeds will be things like begonias or lobelia. Now, when you fill your tray, you need to basically strike it off. So basically overfill the tray, then push it down, strike it off, and then press it down so you get a nice level flat surface. And for fine seed, you'll need to pre-soak your tray. Now, you can stand that in water for about half an hour, or you can give it a good soak with the watering can. But you must do that before you actually sow the seed. Now, fine seed is almost like dust, so you're going to need a carrier. So you won't be able to sow that and see it. So, in other words, fine sand or even a little bit of old wallpaper paste, just the powder, drop it onto a saucer and then open the packet really, really carefully, folks, and then just pour the seed onto the carrier. And then what you can do is you can use it, mix it in with a cocktail stick, and then you can use the carrier to sow the seed onto the seed tray so you can see where you've actually been. Now, medium seed doesn't need to be pre-soaked. You can water that after the fact. But again, things like lettuce, those sorts of things, scatter the seed across the actual surface and then actually cover it. So take your sieve and cover it with compost or vermiculite and then give that a good soak in. Now, large seed are the ones that you can really, really handle. And you might put those into modular trays or even into pots. Things like bean seeds will need to be in pots. And you can be doing those at this time of year. And the rough guide for that, for planting, is 2.5 times the depth of the actual seed itself. Give them a good watering, folks. Label them up. Get them onto a sunny windowsill, or if you haven't got a greenhouse, into the greenhouse. Minimum temperature 18 degrees. And hey presto, in a couple of weeks' time, you'll have a whole host of crops to actually use, utilise, prick out and be ready for the end of May when the frosts are over and done with. What do you think of that then, Molly?
I think that's really exciting. And I wish it was the end of... I don't mean to wish our lives away, but lots of people have started so early, you feel like sticking them out now. But, yeah, June is when you put them out? Wow, that seems such a long time away. But, yeah, old enough. And yeah. I know each week you're going to sort of profile what to sow, so we'd ask that you just always refer back to, Darren's this slot, the sort of how to do it. That was brill.
Well, if anybody wants to see that process, filling the actual seed trays, folks, if you go into YouTube and go to The Laughing Gardener, Darren Rudge, The Laughing Gardener, there's about 40 small videos on there when I did the allotment lockdown challenge. And I'll show you how to basically fill a seed tray and sow. So it's all there for you, folks. Brill. Lots and lots of information on there. And it's difficult describing it, isn't it? If you want to look at it and look at me, you can see my ugly mug and basically see how it's done, then the videos are there for you. They're about 10 minutes long. I tried to keep them nice and short so that, it wouldn't be too much information download or overload, I should say.
Hello, I'm Caroline Quentin and you are listening to the Happy Garden Podcast. Hooray!
Time now for some adverts. Now, we've got lots of your gardening questions still to come. Andy Lowndes going to be here with the history of the bush, which we're really looking forward to. And I think it's definitely worth waiting for as well. I do think he rivals you in the laughing like Muttley Stakes in this
really?
One. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like a laugh-off. Talking of which, we've got Darren's gardening jokes to come. Money-saving tips from our Dazzler as well. So go grab a cuppa. Stay exactly where you are, though. No. Stay where you are, but no, actually, you can't do both, can you? get someone to go and get your cup of tea. Stay where you are, and we'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We're back. You're at our dad's. Yay! Did you get someone to get you a cup of something?
I ordered.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you text your order?
It's on the way. Yeah, I do. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's super Uber.
Delivered to where? Are you in the bedroom?
I am. Yeah. I'm in the marital bedroom. Yeah.
Okay. Just so as we know. Right then, as always, we'd like to welcome you. Maybe if you're new to the Happy Garden Podcast, if you're one of the gang that's been with us for ages, we'd like to thank you for your ongoing support. And I must mention, Darren, as we do now weekly, some people who have joined us, I think, freshly from around the globe. This week, we've had downloads of the podcast in Japan, in Tokyo.
Wow.
We've had a few in Mumbai as well.
Wow.
And in Vietnam, a few in Hanoi in Vietnam.
Wow.
I know.
I'm just astounded.
I know. I don't know how they find us.
No, neither do I. And who's listening? Can somebody let us know if you're in Hanoi?
Email us, thehappygartenpodcast@gmail.com. And I wonder what they're thinking of our Brum and Black Country accents.
I don't know.
And the humour, you know.
Yeah, the humour.
And the imac up the nose with a matchstick. That sort of thing. It's not a black country custom,
no,
by the
no,
way.
No, it's not. No,
no, it's
no,
a Darren
no, 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 no,
thing.
No, no.
It's
That's
not
a Darren thing, yeah.
Darren, you're astounding. Now, where are we now? What sheet are we on?
I could do a range of beauty treatments.
Not if that's anything to go by. I don't think you get an order from Boots somehow.
Rudgie's range of beauty treatments.
Rudgie's range. Now, we're talking about mowing. I'm moving on. We're talking about mowing your... I'm starting sheet four without you.
Okay. Oh, sheet four?
Sheet four. That means we've done three because we've got six sheets.
Blimey, that was quick.
I can't stay around too long because I've got to be absolutely honest. Mr. Green's on his way home with 1,000 chickens. I'm not even joking.
What are you going to do with those?
They're being rehomed today across the country. But he's going to need a hand with them when he gets back. So let's press on with sheet four. By the way, just in case you're wondering what on earth I'm talking about, we do voluntary work for British Hen Welfare Trust, who actually are going to join us on the podcast, aren't they, Daz, very shortly?
Yes.
Yeah, because spring is springing. If you've ever thought of getting hens, these are rescued hens, commercial laying hens, that at the end of the commercial life, they are going to be slaughtered. And they're only 18 months old, so a lot of families right across the UK choose to rescue instead of buy. So they just donate to the charity, and then you take home... Well, they're only babies, they're only 18 months old, but they're rescued chickens. So that's what happens. We'll explain it on the pod in the next few weeks, but that's why he's on the way home with 1,000 hens. So sheet four. We're talking about how mowing your lawn could cost you dearly shortly. But a couple from John in Ireland, two messages this week. Have you seen this on the Happy Garden podcast Facebook page? Yeah, about the lawn. Yeah. Molly, I've got a confession that I need to offer up. Firstly, can I say we've got loads of seedlings coming up in the greenhouse, but, and it's a big but, hence the capital letters, we have had our lawn removed and replaced with an artificial one, and we love it. Due to my disability, all the maintenance fell to my wife, Claire, and at times it was a struggle and I couldn't watch that anymore, so my idea was to go to the dark side. We both love it, but our lurcher buddy is not impressed. I hope we won't be cut off from your podcasts, John.
Excommunicated.
No.
It's no longer John a Wick. Person we talk to. We do not receive emails from you ever again,
no,
John.
No, but wait, there's a little codicil because then he emailed back a couple of days later to say, small update. We were worried the dog buddy might be upset with us for digging up the grass he loves. Firstly, it warms up in the sun. And secondly, it's like a giant brush and he rolls on his back and does the itchy shuffle. And myself and my wife, Claire, love listening to the latest podcast with a cuppa in hand. P.S. We've also got a song thrush in the tree just behind us. That's lovely. But the dog actually likes it. He uses it as a good scratching post.
Yeah, I mean, there is a place for artificial turf. So, you know, I don't like it because it's obviously not sustainable. And John obviously has an issue to deal with and he's dealt with it. So, you know, well done to you, John. At the end of the day. And, yeah, the dog, I mean, they're not no maintenance, let's put it like that. So people think they can just put this stuff down. And this is where it gets really irritating, is that they think that that's it, it's done. You know, we don't have to mow it anymore, but you might have to hoover it, and you've got to sand it, and you've got to do all this sort of stuff, and it still doesn't stop weeds from coming in. And then, you know, if you do get the dog on there and it does a tiddly-poo, you've still got, a problem for sterilising it. So I'm not a fan, as John knows, but you had a personal situation you had to deal with, John. So, yeah, you're still a member. I promise.
Yeah, you're allowed.
You're okay. Yeah, you're allowed.
With Claire with a disability and lawn maintenance, as you know, and you tell us regularly, it is a lot. So I think the fact you've still got a lovely vista and a lovely garden... It's just a compromise I've had to make. So, yeah, you're still one. You're still in that gang.
Well, it makes me chuckle, really, when I go to see a client for a garden design and they say, we want a low-maintenance garden, but we want a lovely lawn, because lawns are not low-maintenance.
No.
And we've just literally, at our Warsall garden, phase one is complete, and we just put the lawn in there. And I've had to spend nearly an hour with these folks actually talking to them about actually what to do with their lawn, you know, and how to maintain it and how to keep it top quality. So, you know, John, good on you. That's all I can say.
Mm. Absolutely. And you're always more than welcome to get in touch. The Happy Garden Podcast at gmail.com. Babs and Nick, we shall be answering your questions very shortly on rhubarb. and bringing last year's fuchsias back to life. But Darren, we did say we'd mention this a little bit earlier
back
on.
Back to the fuchsia.
Darren! I'm really, really pleased with you on that one. Oh, good. That makes me excited
God,
for your
people
jokes.
Listening to this get really annoyed with me.
No, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. But, yeah, before we do go back to the future, mowing has been in the news this week. Don't mow. As soon as I saw the headline, don't mow, or it could cost you, or something similar to that, I thought, well, what if Darren's seen this? Basically, it's don't mow in the wet.
Yeah, well, you know, the things that you need to consider about you. We should have done this in the past, folks. You should have done this before now, you naughty people. Make sure your blades are sharp. Now, just be careful here because you shouldn't really be sharpening your blade, OK, because they're balanced. Just buy a new blade if you need to sharpen it. Just make sure the blades are sharp because if you try and sharpen it yourself, the machine becomes unbalanced and basically can be quite damaging or dangerous to you, let alone your lawn. But obviously a sharp blade is going to cut that turf really effectively and efficiently. First cut, always raise the deck, always raise it up so to its highest setting anyway. That will just literally take the top off the lawn. But if it has been raining or it is particularly wet and we've been through a really wet period anyway, just make sure that you choose the driest day. Brush the lawn off. Get your house brush, you know, your yard broom, and just brush the top surface. And that will knock the water off the top surface down to the bottom of the sward. So you're not mowing through water. And basically clean your mower up. So, you know, after you've done the job, make sure that it's all cleaned through. Wet grass will stick, particularly to the lower deck, and any of the shoots that come out that go into the mower bag, just make sure you get a good rinse down. Make sure it's really well cleaned up. And then just take it slow, folks. When you're mowing, just make sure that you're taking it slow. Don't force the mower through the grass. Take it slow, slow down, and do it gradually, emptying the box every time it's full. If you haven't mowed your lawn and in jobs for the week, I have been warning you, you could just give it a little bit of a tidy. But if you haven't done that, then you might find it a little bit difficult first time in. But as I've said, sharp blades, raise that deck right the way to its top setting. Take it slow. And then clean that mower down, hose it down, and then wipe it off, and then just store it away so that it's not damp. And that's the way to stop damaging your turf in wet weather and to keep your machine up and running.
And do poo patrol first.
Oh, yeah.
Dear Ooh. God. I didn't last time I mowed. Right, that's sheet four done.
Sheet four.
Andy Lowndes' History of the Bush is next.
Oh, great.
I know. After, let's just have a little bit of a warm-up, though. Do you want to do your jokes, Ardaz? Let's see if you can top last week.
Can do, yeah.
All right. How confident are you?
I think I'm okay. Well, I mean, yeah, yeah.
Let's be the judge of that.
I think they're fair to middling.
All right, let's go.
Now in the Happy Garden.
It's about time for some Alan Titters. Brace yourself for your gardening jokes of the week from Darren Rudge.
Come on then, let's be having you.
Well, the Allotment Society I'm a member of, Molly, have started a group for antisocial people. I haven't made a meeting yet.
Yes. I actually looked out the window then as I was processing that one. Yeah, no, that's good. I like it.
Okay.
Yep. One. Right.
I'm tired of being browbeaten by Mrs. Darren Molly, who thinks she's a better gardener than me. I really need to grow a pair.
Oh, that's good. Good, good, good.
Molly, I went into my local library to ask where could I find out which oil to use for my lawnmower.
Right.
The librarian pointed me to the non-friction section.
That's, yeah, good. I like three.
Whilst doing some garden weeding, I said to my wife, I think you're right. She said to me, I didn't say anything. Molly, I was only trying to save time.
Do it again.
Oh, no.
Do it again.
Molly,
yes.
Whilst doing some weeding in the garden, I said to my wife, I think you're right. And my wife said back to me, I didn't say anything. I was only trying to save some time.
Don't get it.
Should we move on?
Yep.
That's because you're a woman. Molly, I'm moving on. Molly, I'm sure I saw Arnold Schwarzenegger in my neighbour's garden trying to deal with his mole problem. Yeah? OK. You see, now he's an ex-Terminator.
Oh, yeah, good. No, that's good. I like that.
Now, yes. You're my friend, aren't you, Molly? And I can tell you all my secrets, can't
Please
I?
Please do.
Yeah, so, but don't tell Mrs. Darren I've been having an affair, a secret affair, down the allotment with an English teacher.
Yeah.
Friday night frolics in the potting shed, OK?
Oh, God.
But she dumped me last week for improper use of the colon.
I'm not sure what to say about that.
Is it good to laugh at your own jokes?
That's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I hope the National Trust aren't listening to this.
You don't get this on Radio 4.
Colon jokes and him hack up the nose with a matchstick. Tell me number three again. Or maybe, or was it four?
Which one?
Give me the time one again.
About the...
I can't move on unless we clear that up.
I was talking to my wife in the garden when I was weeding.
Weeding?
We weren't having a conversation. Yeah. We were just weeding. And I just suddenly said to her, this might help you, I think you're right. Okay?
Yes.
And she said back to me, I didn't say anything.
That's the bit. Oh, you were being sexist. That's the bit I didn't get. I wouldn't expect that from you, Darren.
So I'm only trying to save time.
I see.
She's always right.
I see. It was a sexist joke. Now, as I say, I didn't expect it from you, so but that's it. Darren, that was very, very good. Right, shall we get on to Andy Land and the history of the bush?
Yes, please.
You're going to love this.
I'm just thinking, we've done imac up the nose, a colon joke, and now we're talking about bushes.
No, as I say, yeah. Right. Okay, here is the amazing and the astounding Andy Lounding with the history of the bush.
It's amazing and astound with Andy Lound. That's me. Hello, Molly and Darren. In today's potted history, I will delve into the history of the ornamental bush. Those delightful, versatile shrubs that add aesthetic appeal and character to our landscapes. The ornamental bush is a cornerstone of garden design, offering a wide range of colours, shapes, sizes and textures. Sorry. These bushes are living artworks and contribute to the overall harmony and balance of our gardens. Firstly, let's talk about the diversity of bushes. In England, we have formal, well-manicured bushes. In France, a more natural wild bush is preferred. Sorry, this is really juvenile. One exceptional quality of bushes is their ability to serve multiple purposes. Beyond their obvious aesthetic value, these bushes can act as privacy screens, windbreaks, or even as focal points. Additionally, many bushes attract pollinators. Beyond their obvious aesthetic value, these bushes can act as privacy screens, windbreaks, or even as focal points. Additionally, many bushes attract pollinators and wildlife, fostering a healthier and more vibrant ecosystem. It was two women who set the standard for quality bushes, Gertrude Jekyll and Beatrix Ferrand. Jekyll worked with Sir Edward Lutyens, and Ferrand's works include the Rockefeller Estate and the White House. Ferrand set a new standard for designs, using a variety of blooms interspersed in the bush, adding colour. These were seasonal bushes, ensuring that the garden looked alive all year round. Jekyll used multiple bushes. Jekyll used multiple bushes to create a formal landscape, dividing it into specific areas. Plain coloured bushes, cut into shapes, is known as topiary and dates from 44 BCE. The premier topiary garden started in the late 17th century by M. Beaumont, a French gardener who laid out the gardens of Hampton Court. It was in the 20th century that suburban gardens started to include topiary, often as animals and in some cases rude shapes to annoy the neighbours. Go well with the bush, wouldn't it? Now let's discuss the practical aspects of caring for your bush. Most of these shrubs are relatively low maintenance, requiring regular watering, well-trained soil and occasional pruning to maintain their shape and encourage healthy growth. Pruning in particular is a powerful tool in shaping the structure of bushes, allowing us to enhance their natural beauty and maintain a tidy appearance. In conclusion, ornamental bushes are the unsung heroes of the garden design. As we cultivate these living artworks, we contribute not only to the beauty of our gardens, but also to the overall health of our natural environment. So let's celebrate the diversity, versatility, and enduring charm of the ornamental bush. And why not take a leaf from Perrin's book and liven your ornamental bush with some pink peonies? So, Molly and Darren, more from the potting shed next time.
Thank you, Andy Lamb. Andy Lound, everybody. Oh, yay,
I think that's one of the best he's ever done.
Oh, dear. Just brilliant.
No mention of our Brazilian friends, then.
What has happened to the podcast today? Oh, dear. I'm so sorry, everybody. We're walking the line today.
We are, really. Yeah. We'll get banned.
From where?
I don't know.
We certainly could have done this on the BBC, by goodness.
No, not at all. Imagine the producer.
Well, it depends which one it was, doesn't it? Right, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Right, where are we? Halfway through sheet five.
Do you remember when we did condoms as a money-saving tip?
Oh, you got into trouble for that.
I did, yeah. I've got an email for that one.
What?
It was. I think it was when I suggested using them as a rain hat. I think that just tipped him over the edge.
No, I can see that. But what I can see why you got an email for that suggestion. But didn't you have a serious suggestion of how to use them in the garden?
Yeah, for propagation.
How? I can't remember.
Well, if you've got, especially at this time, actually, it's actually really on point.
Do you want to do it as your money saving tip today?
Yeah, I'll do it as my money saving tip today.
Oh, hang on a sec.
There
you
go.
Hang on, let me get your money saving now. We might as well do it.
I was going to profile a plant sock, but this is pretty appropriate as well.
Oh, yes. It's time for Darren's money saving tips. Save that for next week. Go ahead.
Yeah, propylaptic propagators, folks.
What?
Propylaptic propagators. If you're studying for space in your greenhouse at this particular point in time, and you do actually propagate things like your pelargoniums and your fuchsias, and you just haven't got any space for any pots, then pop yourself some string lines up in your greenhouse, and actually you can peg your propylactics, your condoms, okay.
Excellent.
Along the edge, put some compost in, put your cuttings in, you can water them, okay, and you can see when they are actually rooted, and then you can pot them up. You'll double, if not treble, the amount of room that you've actually got. And just think what Mavis next door will think when you've got a whole colourful range of rib ticklers running across your glass house. I wonder what the people in Mumbai think about that.
Oh dear, Darren. No wonder you had an email.
Darren's money saving tips.
There we go.
Way.
Job done. That was very organic. Oh, Darren. Right, we're right. We've done money saving now. We've jumped ahead on this. Got my sheets confused now.
Okay. Well, we was on sheet five, I think.
We're on sheet five. All right, let's do Babs from Coles Hill and her back to the fuchsias.
Hey, McFly. Hello. Hello. Anybody home? Hey, think, McFly. Think.
Right, Molly and Darren, this is an email, by the way, thehappygardenpodcast@gmail.com. Loving the podcast, both. I've got a question for Darren. My fuchsias have been left out all winter and now have small shoots appearing. Could Darren please tell me the best time to move them into new soil and pots? Should I do it now or leave it until they get bigger? Thank you for the entertaining podcast. I didn't know gardening could be so funny. Who did, Babs? Yes. Wonderful. Babs, it's lovely to hear from you. Darren, you've seen the pictures. I think this is on the Facebook, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's fine, Babs, for you to do it right now. That's starting to kick off, as I call it. You know, they're starting to actively grow. So they're going to need that extra compost that you give them. Get them into new pots or even into the ground. You know, if they're hardy fuchsias, then pop them outside, they're fine. If they're not hardy fuchsias, then put them into pots and pot them up. Get some fresh compost around the roots because they're ready to go. That's what they're actually telling you to do, you know, with these new shoots. I say, Mummy Babs, I need to basically be potted up, because I'm ready to grow for you and produce those wonderful, stunning flowers that we all love fuchsias for. So get them into new pots, get fresh compost around their roots and watch them grow.
Do you have to cut them down a bit? From the recollection of the picture, they're very, literally, they were just last year's hanging basket. So very, not leggy, but obviously the growth is really tall and the shoots all the way up the brown bit. But do you want to cut them down or...?
Yeah, take them back by half.
Oh, by half, okay.
And again, above a leaf joint or what we call a node. Okay, so where the growth is starting to shoot, again, a quarter of an inch or 5 millimetres above that. It's a general rule, folks, so just prune them back and it will cause them to bush. We've been there once, haven't we, on the podcast?
But
it will cause them to bush and you'll have a bushier plant for you to actually use and utilise in your garden space.
Okay. But doesn't that go to show, Babs and everybody else and all our pots, you know, if you just left stuff outside last year, I bet your bottom dollar loads is coming back. Goes to show just what a mild winter we've had, in that I'd imagine lots of fuchsias, lots of geraniums, lots of non-hardy plants have made it through.
We've not had a winter, Molly.
No, we really haven't.
Haven't, no. Couple of days of frost, couple of days when I've had to scrape the windscreen off, you know, it's not much at all.
I don't remember the last harsh one we had. It was January, maybe, I don't know. But yeah. when it was like -5, and yeah, there's only been a couple. So yeah, interesting. When your bush does, a fuchsia bush does come back though, Babs, do send us a picture. That would be smashing. So thank you, Babs. And on to a question from the lovely Emran, who says, Molly, Darren, I hope you're well. And as always, I'm enjoying the giggles and the tip-top humour on the Happy Garden podcast. Ramadan has started, so wishing everybody who's listening a blessed month. I wanted to check with you. I have had all my lawns scarified by Green Thumb, which is a local company. They did all of the groundwork and cleared up all of the thatch and moss off the lawn, and it's been removed. The picture shows one of my lawns, and it's quite a dramatic picture. Darren, are there any top tips on the scarification aftercare? Shall I just bear with this and hope the lawn will come back and be lush again? Thanks for any advice, as always, and that's the lovely Emran. And as you've seen, Darren, the picture, the picture is a little bit scary,
Yeah, but it's quite natural, it's quite normal for it to look like that, Molly, especially when the lawn has been scarified. Because let's just describe the scarification process. What you are trying to do is you're trying to relieve the top surface compaction and open the sward up. So they take this machine with massive blades on and they cut into the surface. And it takes out all of the thatch and all of the stuff that's actually dropped off the lawnmower. So, lawns till. So they're one of the only plants that actually do this. So as we cut into the surface, what it does, Imran, is it causes new blades of grass to form. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with what's been done to your lawn area. And just bear with it. OK, just give it a little bit of a water. Perhaps in a couple of weeks' time, give it a spring feed. OK, and I promise you, it'll be back. It'll be lusher than ever and you'll have an absolutely fabulous lawn. So from the pictures you've shown me, I'm not surprised what it looks like, but there's absolutely nothing for you to worry about.
I do remember historically you saying, Darren, that it's you call it scarification because it looks so scary afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. And it's got to be brutal because you've got to cut into that top surface and remove that compaction and cut into, you know, the root system of the turf. So it'll till and it tills just at the surface. And what you do is you get your sward to bush. And when you've got a bushy sward, basically...
Oh, not this again.
not to bushes again, folks. When you've got a bushy sward, it'll bush out. And that means that weeds can't come in and take hold because your lawn is just filled with grass. And there you go.
Yeah.
So no problem at all.
Oh, yeah. Hold your nerve. Thank you, Darren. And thank you, Imran, for the question.
The Happy Garden Podcast.
Right, well, you've done your money saving, so that's about it, really. We've just got a few jobs to do and...
Have
you done everything of yours today?
Yeah. Just like you say, a few jobs.
Yeah, I think we've made a fist out of episode 29.
Yeah. Who'd have thought we'd have got to 29 when we started at number one?
We're doing very well. We're doing very well. Darren, let's finish episode 29 with some... some jobs for the week ahead. Now, yes, we've been saying we haven't had much of a winter, but, I mean, we are sort of... There are nights of 0, 1, 2 degrees, so we've still got a few chilly nights to come. But what should we be getting on with?
Now in the Happy Garden.
Oh, I say, sweetie, this is my favourite bit. Time for Darren to be absolutely flabulous and regale us with his gardening jobs for the week ahead.
Well, yes.
So you could have been doing this.
I didn't give you your proper 3, 2, 1, so I had a massive mouthful of coffee. 3, 2, 1, go.
Should have been doing this already, folks, but you can still take pelargonium cuttings, around about 3 to 4 inches long. Below a leaf joint, remove those lower leaves, folks. Leave a pair on top. Intercutting compost, pop a bag over the top and put them on a nice sunny windowsill. And then within 6 to 8 weeks, you'll have roots on there. You can have more geraniums, can't you? Weed your borders and beds and spread that compost from your compost bin all over your beds and borders. Remember, this adds valuable nutrients to the soil and acts as a mulch. It'll trap all this moisture that we've had in the soil so that you won't have to water during the long, hot summer that we've got to come. Feed your fruit trees with potash fertiliser. Plant some summer fruit in raspberry canes. And as it's starting to warm up, folks, think about laying a new lawn. Do all that preparation. We did this week in Warsaw at our Warsaw project. Buy your turf in, OK? Do all that preparation and lay yourself a new lawn.
Nice, easy. Easy. Yeah, get on with that this week.
Easy peasy.
Malinky. Darren, that's been smashing.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's always a joy and always a wonder. We've got to make this accessible, haven't we?
It's been a bit crude in parts, a bit lewd in parts. Apologies, we didn't plan it that way.
It just developed.
Just developed that way. here on the Happy Garden Podcast. So time to say goodbye. I suppose both of us ought to... Well, I am sort of dressed. I know you're still in your gym jams. We ought to commence our day, really, haven't we?
Yeah, I have a routine now I have to follow, you see. So... I'll start my routine.
Doesn't involve your Mac, does it?
Might do.
Oh, God. Oh, Darren. Listen, have a gorgeous week, and now all your RHS exams are finished. I hope you have a relaxing week and you manage to get your feet up and sort of catch up with yourself a bit, Daz.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And, folks, enjoy your gardening. Get out there and garden. There's no excuse now, is there?
Absolutely. And as they would say in Back to the Fuchsia...
So why don't you make like a tree... and get out of here.
You've been listening to the Happy Garden Podcast with Molly Green and Darren Rudge. If you'd like to send them an email, get in touch with the Happy Garden Podcast by emailing thehappygardenpodcast@gmail.com. Follow them on social media. Just search for the Happy Garden Podcast. Can we say Happy Garden Podcast just one more time? The Happy Garden Podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.